Welcome to Computer Corner here on 1420 WCOJ, heard every Wednesday evening from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. I'm your host, Gene Mitchell. I have my sidekick, Joe Huber, here in the studio, and I have a special guest with me tonight who's going to be talking on wireless technology, Troy Cerveno from Solutions?
NetForcement.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
We'll get that straight before the night's over. Anyway, we're going to be taking your calls shortly. You know, after we get going, we're going to have some news, and we're going to give you some instructions here. This is a call-in show after we get going with the news and the topic of the evening. Take this number down. You'll want it to call in. 610-701-4294. 610-701-4294 is the only number you need to know. And we also have a website that we want you to be aware of, because there's information on the website, including our complete schedule of where we've been and where we're going, and that is www.wcoj.com. And under WCOJ.com, programming, and you'll find Computer Corner.
And a sexy picture of Gene.
Oh, geez. Don't tell me you put that up there, Joe.
Yep.
Well, anyway, we also have an email address. And we want you to know our email address, because a little later in the show, we're going to check for emails in case you don't want to call in. We'll be checking some emails. We do want to get your calls, though. And if it's an alternative for email, ComputerCorner@WCOJ.com. Very easy to remember, ComputerCorner@WCOJ.com, and we'll check the email somewhere about 7:30, 7:35. Meanwhile, let's get a little computer news in here, because some of this is very interesting, and it's not that the first topic is very new. Service Pack 2 was released by Microsoft 2 months ago, and it continues to be a major nightmare. Computer users shouldn't be without it, but Service Pack 2 continues to crash more and more computers every day. Conflicts with both drivers and software are reported. Computer users need to obtain Service Pack on a CD rather than a download. The first item of preparation, though, is you need to back up any of your data that's not replaceable, your pictures, your music, your documents, and so forth. That should be done before you start doing Service Pack 2. Turn off all automatically starting programs with the configuration utility and then proceed, hoping for the best. Sources claim 40% of all computers will crash when installing Service Pack 2, yet the experts say it's essential. More information is available at CNET.com. Here's an interesting new name. Search giant Google announced that it has acquired Keyhole, a company specializing in internet software that allows people to view satellite images from all around the globe. Financial terms of the deal were not announced, but Google says it has cut pricing for Keyhole's flagship software package, Keyhole 2 LT, dropping licensing costs for the application from $70 to $30. Another interesting item comes out of Moffett Field, California. Although a victor won't be declared for 2 weeks yet, Silicon Graphics has become the second computer maker to boast that its machinery is leading the competition for the world's fastest supercomputer. The system, a $50 million Linux-based NASA machine called Columbia, which SGI sold in July, can perform 42.7 trillion calculations per second, or 42.7 teraflops.
I want one.
Gee, I think we all need one. Well, anyway, speed isn't the final word. The system used to be only 4/5 of 10,240 Intel Itanium 2 processors in the full machine being on close at NASA's Ames Research Center. The speed is a notch faster than the 36.1 teraflops IBM reported for its Blue Gene Flash L system in September. Our topic tonight is wireless technology, and we have with us in the studio my expert, Troy Cerveno, who is going to be telling us a little bit about this. And before we get to Troy, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. We're back again. This is Computer Corner, heard every Wednesday on 1420 WCOJ, the voice of Chester County. I'm your host, Gene Mitchell. I have with me in the studio a sidekick, Joe Huebler, who is a friend of mine, and also a special guest, Troy Susano. First, take down this number because we're going to have call-in, 610-701-4294. And don't forget, we have email, computercorner@wcoj.com. Our topic tonight is wireless technology, and our special guest, Troy Susano from NetFirstman. Troy is the director and principal of this boutique security consulting firm located in Conshohocken, Pennsylvania, and has 17 years' experience in building, breaking, securing network infrastructures and environments. NetFirstman specializes in security assessments, remediation, and monitoring for corporations in the greater Philadelphia area. Good evening, Troy.
Hi, Gene.
Hi, Joe.
Glad you could make it. This should be a very interesting night and program tonight. Troy, this wireless technology, they're calling it Wi-Fi. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Sure. Wi-Fi basically is the technology that's giving you wireless networking, and they've started to make some standards around that. The difference between a typical network at an office where you have a wired network, you plug your computer into the wall jack to be on the network. With a Wi-Fi or wireless network, you basically are using the radio waves. So it gives you the freedom to use a laptop in your kitchen instead of having to run a cable across the floor.
Now, I've also heard these numbers, 802.11b and 802.11g. What does that have to do with Wi-Fi?
Basically, those are some standards. There's a standards group that tries to create these versions of Wi-Fi, and every version is given a number. So 802.11b was the first version that actually took off in the industry. And the 802.11b basically is an 11 megabit wireless network that runs on the 2.4 gigahertz band. The G is a newer version. It's basically just about five times as fast.
Okay. This is all very interesting technology. Who would use Wi-Fi, so our listeners know?
Well, really, the biggest pickup in the market was home users. That's where the market first grew. Most businesses were a little leery of the technology, specifically concerns around security and things like that. Basically, when the 802.11b was released, most of the manufacturers like Linksys and D-Link and all the types of devices you'd see at, Circuit City, even Best Buy or Staples,
right,
where you can buy this technology for less than $200 in a box and take it home.
It's great.
So it was really, in a sense, a grassroots consumer product before it really made it big. Once it took off, the corporations started paying more attention to it and implementing it themselves.
So individuals are using it at home, and corporations are using it.
The one thing I want to say about the corporations, most corporations, when you talk to them, they say, we're not using wireless. And what we found day-to-day is something called rogue access points. And that doesn't sound too good, does it?
That isn't.
It's basically when someone brings in an access point to
come home,
on the way to work, they stop at Staples, and because they like the freedom of wireless, they plug this access point under the desk. No one knows it's there. The IT department, no one knows except this one salesperson. That's a huge security risk, and basically there's been some studies, and one in five corporations has one or more rogue access points.
That sounds scary.
Well,
anyway, there are some access points that are good access points, and do you want to explain what hotspots are and where they might be found?
Sure. Hotspot, the terminology hotspot, typically what you think of or should think of when you think of a hotspot is something that's for the public. You may have to pay a fee to use it, or it may be free, but it's made for the public. It's legal to use. And hotspots are at airports. You may actually have to pay, $5 an hour to access it. Love Park and actually the whole city of Philadelphia is being wired for wireless, and it's going to be totally free. Love Park, they actually enabled a few weeks ago where you can go and sit in the area of Love Park, connect to the internet for free, no cost, and that's considered a hotspot.
Aren't there some chain stores now that are touting that they got some...
Oh, sure. Chain stores like Starbucks,
right.
You buy a little card, I believe, and you have an access number and password. Now, they force you to pay to get on. I walked into a Wendy's, and it actually had a little thing on the door. It said, Wi-Fi for our customers. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. When I'm down in the city... doing work, I'll actually stop at a little cafe called Old City Coffee. They have free wireless. Well, the reason I stop there is because it's free. I can sit for half an hour, do my email, and then go to my next
stop. And they still sell coffee.
And, sure, exactly. So it's a benefit to everyone to have hotspots. But hotspots are a little different than public hotspots are different than private wireless networks.
Right.
When somebody goes into one of these hotspots, like a Starbucks, or one of these other things that we were talking about, they turn on their computer, they can tune in the signal and surf the internet. Is it possible that somebody could get information off that person's computer?
Most definitely. One of the issues with wireless technology is, first, users don't understand the technology. They don't understand what's at risk. They believe when they're using a wireless connection and sending email or ordering things online that it's a secure connection that only they can see it. What they don't realize is most wireless has a minimum of 350 feet radius, meaning if you have wireless at home, your neighbor, in theory, could be using your access point or potentially seeing what you're typing.
Okay?
This has become more of an issue as products have become easier to use. Like Gene says, you walk into this hotspot at a coffee shop. XP automatically attaches to the wireless signal that's strongest. Not maybe your signal, maybe your neighbor's signal. So the technology is almost the reverse of security. Instead of having security on there and you remove security, the XP, the way it connects to any access point you can find, is almost reverse security. And then also the products, when you purchase them, they come, so you plug them in and they work. The reason they work is because they're unsecure.
Right. That means that if you go down to Love Park or Starbucks and you are on the internet, you're at risk. What should that person do so that somebody can't look at their files or get their files or do something to their computer?
Well, there's a couple issues there in talking about wireless security and how to protect yourself. The first and most basic level of protection is to protect your computer. And the way you do that is by installing a software firewall. Now, you discussed Service Pack 2 and having some issues and people crashing when they're installing it, but Service Pack 2 has a firewall configured in it. And that's one of the big advantages of having Service Pack 2 is people from the outside, other computers, cannot get into your computer. There are also other software firewalls for free, like Zone Alarm has a version that's free. You can also buy a pro version, Black Ice. A software firewall loads in your computer, and it's just like a hardware firewall. It restricts access to your machine. That's the first minimum level of protection you want to have before you go wireless. That's not going to protect your data that you send over the internet. So if I went, you know, to send an email to Eugene with my personal address and my phone number, that's plain text. As soon as that leaves my computer and is being broadcast by my transmitter that's in my computer, anyone with a radio in the area or a computer in the area that has Wi-Fi could read that text. So you have to understand that anything that leaves your computer, unless it's encrypted, can be read by anyone.
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
It is actually very scary, but it's unbelievable how many people, home users specifically, feel that they are secure.
Right.
And it's really a misunderstanding. They're not acknowledging and they don't know what there is out there for risk. And I want to give you this one report that came out this week, and there's a perfect example of Wi-Fi security. They also address other issues. And basically, there was a home study of computer users done by AOL and NCSA. It's called the Online Safety Study. Basically, what they did is they were taking a look at the perception gap between reality and what the user believes. Okay? So more than three quarters of the people interviewed said they think their computer is very or somewhat safe from online threats. But then you turn the page and you read about firewalls. And it says two-thirds of all users do not have any firewall protection. So the perception of being safe and the reality of them not having a firewall shows that end users really don't understand the risks that are out there. And one piece I want to read you about the wireless section that they talked about here was almost 2 in 5 wireless users leave their connections completely open, meaning no encryption of any type. And that's what we're going to be talking about later tonight, is how to encrypt things and some of the issues involved with wireless.
Actually, that was my next question, because we're right there. We're going to protect our computer, the wireless computer, with a firewall. We ought to have it anyway, even if it isn't wireless. But encryption. And I use Wi-Fi, so I happen to know, and my questions are based from the listeners here. But let's explain what encryption is. What is it? Where is it? How do you deal with it? How do you turn it on? How do you know that it's working?
Okay. One of the things I just want to restate, out of the box, every product has encryption turned off. So basically, it is the most insecure mode when you open your box, your product to install.
That's so when you open the box and hook it up, it works.
That's correct. And the funny thing is, some people have taken home their office laptop, turned it on, and have been surfing the web from their house, even though they don't own an access point and never purchased DSL. They were connecting next door.
Right.
So the NFP automatically can connect to any access point. So there's many risks, and I'm going to repeat this several times, and I'll sound like I'm trying to scare you, but I'm not. I'm just hoping that people will do a little research and maybe secure their networks. The encryption that you were asking about, Gene, encryption is just like writing a coded letter. So instead of sending you my address and phone number as plain text that anyone could read, I'm going to use a coding scheme to scramble that up, and only you will be able to decode it and read it. So encryption is a way to protect the data that's being transmitted. Typically, you don't have to worry about this. If you're in an office wired to the wall, you don't care that your data is unencrypted going from your machine to the server and back and forth, because someone would physically have to break in and connect to your network. You have walls, you have locks, you have the typical security guards. Wireless breaks all those rules. Wireless, I send you a message roughly 350 feet or up to 51 miles from the latest test of some Wi-Fi products. People have been able to read or look at the data. So we want to encrypt that data. When I send any information from my laptop to an access point, which is my DSL or cable modem, I don't want it unencrypted. We're going to use WEP as the first level.
And WEP is something that you turn on in the laptop and the access point.
Yeah, WEP is very basic protection, and I consider a no trespassing sign. And that's all it is. A no trespassing sign is not going to stop somebody from walking on your yard. It's going to have honest people look at it and say, maybe I shouldn't walk across this yard, and they'll go by. WEP will not actually protect you from someone who wants to look at your data. What WEP will do is turn away people who accidentally connect. They won't be able to accidentally connect anymore with WEP enabled. So that's our first stage. Always turn on WEP, but don't consider it the end-all and be-all of security.
Right. Is the next layer of protection also built in, or is that something you have to go by?
The newer products are shipping with something called WPA. And WPA is also called Wi-Fi Protected Access. And most products that have been shipping maybe in the last 5 months, maybe 4 months, have that. However, it's much harder to configure. WEP, you turn on the access point, you type in a password, you type in your laptop, type in a password, you're done. WEP, WPA, you have to download a patch from Microsoft. It's not on auto update. You can't auto update it. You have to actually go out there and get it. You have to install it. And so there's more steps involved. But WPA is considered real security. The encryption routine is not crackable.
Is that still the case even with the service pack too, that it still is a patch?
I was supposed to be part of that. I don't know if it is.
The last reference I looked at, it was still a download.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to see if we have any callers that would like to call in with questions on Wi-Fi, on wireless computer technology. You're listening to Computer Corner here on 1420 WCOJ. You are listening to Computer Corner here on 1420 WCOJ, the voice of Chester County. I'm your host, Gene Mitchell. I have in the studio Joe Hubler and Troy Cerzano, who is from NetForcement, a expert on wireless security. That is his business. That's what he does for corporations to make sure that they are safe. And we've been talking about all the things, all the trouble we can get into, and some of the things that we can do to make our computers safer if we have this wireless connection. We do have a call, so we're going to take our first caller. Can we get your name, and would you care to join us?
Yes, my name's Joanne, and I have a we have Comcast is what we have. And the main cable modem is in the other room, and I have the wireless adapter in my room. Okay. And we got to upgrade it things on my Windows. I have Windows XP Professional, and the service pack 2 keeps coming up for me to install. So I went ahead and installed it one day, and I got this pop-up box come up and said it may not be compatible. But it said, do you want to continue? So I did. Well, then I could not connect to the internet. It wouldn't let me. And I had all kinds of problems, but I had to remove it. So is there any way that it is compatible?
You're referring to the service pack, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things we had mentioned in the beginning of the show. Okay. You're not alone in having trouble with the service pack. We're finding a lot of incompatibilities. I have a store in Fraser,
okay,
which I'm a proprietor of, Gene's Computer Outlet, and I work on computers all day long, and we are seeing some real crazy trouble with service pack too. As a matter of fact, I also teach a class, and in the middle on Tuesday night, I was installing a brand new computer, a motherboard made by Intel, with a Windows XP on, and put the drivers on, which is the modem drivers, and without any other software, we put Service Pack 2 on. Guess what happened? It crashed. So I was sort of expecting it because I've seen it before, but I did it that way to show the class what exactly happened. We reformatted the drive real quickly in the class. We put XP back on clean, and we put the Service Pack 2 on next, and then put the drivers on, and guess what? Some of the drivers didn't go on. So that's telling us that the drivers have some issues with the Service Pack. So for the time being, there's not a lot you can do. The one thing that I would suggest is to go on the website and make sure that your drivers are up to date. Go on Microsoft's website, and they have updates for your drivers, your display, your network card, your sound card.
Oh, yeah, I do that. I usually do that. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I always try to keep my computer updated. I go into even the Windows update. I check on that a lot, even though it's supposed to come up automatically. I've got it set for that. But I do check a lot of times for I have Norton antivirus on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I even automatically check that too, because I've got the firewall and I've got the whole shebang on there to try to keep people out of my computer.
It sounds like you're doing it right. It's just it's a matter of time, I guess, till Microsoft and your driver manufacturers all get together and fix this, really.
Yeah.
It sounds like you said you couldn't get on the internet after you downloaded Service Pack 2, so Service Pack 2 loaded, but your wireless didn't work anymore?
Yeah. So what I even tried with that was I uninstalled the wireless, and then I tried to reinstall it after I put the Service Pack, and it worked. but then all of a sudden it says you are disconnected from the internet, and then I had to like click on it and hit repair.
Yeah, it looks like basically at that point you're going to have to go to the wireless vendor, whether it's Linksys or B-Link or whatever, and get an update specifically that supports Service Pack 2.
I think it's Microsoft. Microsoft.
I think that might be a little funny.
Yeah.
Microsoft. But yeah, you would want to go to Microsoft's website, not just the Windows update. You specifically have to look into their wireless update and make sure it's compatible with Service Pack 2. I don't have any experience with that product, though. So.
You're not going to be alone. Somebody else is going to experience it, and sooner or later, it probably will be made to work. Now, are you surfing the internet now? Is it working for you?
Oh, yes. I put Service Pack 2 out.
You are probably going to have to stay at that point until something happens.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, that's one of the things.
Service Pack 3.
The best recommendation I can give you is to make sure your firewall is turned on.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that it does is turn on the firewall, which is not on by default.
Yeah. Mine's on. I've got mine on. That's one of the first things usually I check, is making sure everything's working, especially with it, like firewall and antivirus. I always keep that up to date.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. I hope we've been some help to you.
Yes, actually, yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
You too.
Well, she's doing everything right. She's doing everything right, and she's basically got an issue with a service pack, which doesn't surprise me. As I said, I had the same issue, and I just haven't had the time to research that particular issue, but I'm going to have to take the time. And anyway, I'm your host, Gene Mitchell. You're listening to Computer Corner here on 1420 WCOJ. I have in the studio Jay Huber and special guest Corey Susano, who goes fighting these little bugs day in and day out. He's from a company in Conshohocken called NetForcement. And Corey, we were talking about all this things that can happen with the eavesdropping and the encryption, all that. Who are these people that would actually want to tap into your computer and get your information?
Well, the first thing I want to do is give you three types of people or three types of activities. And the first activity would be called listening, okay, a passive activity, almost like listening to the radio at home. Not going into the network, not trying to steal any information, but just listening. And that's something called war driving. You may have heard of that. It's a terminology for people who drive around in their cars with laptops,
mm-hmm.
and they spot access points.
We actually had that little piece in the news a week or two ago.
Yeah. And actually, on the way down here, I did a little war driving, and we found 100 access points that were totally open, and about 65 that had wet.
Let's talk about this war driving for a minute. That sounds like a war over computers and wireless. The fact that you were war driving, is that bad, good? How do you classify yourself as war driving?
War driving is actually an innocent activity, and it's not criminal in any way. And even the FBI has said that it's not criminal. The idea is you're listening and looking for access points. It's almost like going bird watching. You see, three birds, you write it down on your list, you call these birds at this location. War driving, by using a GPS and your laptop and a wireless card, you can drive anywhere and map those access points on a map. You can go down on the web and actually look at access points. Just seeing where they are is not crossing the line to where you're using their network or breaking into their network. You're just spotting it. And I was doing it for probably the last 2 years now just to see the growth.
Right.
Whereas I used to go up my lane from my office and I'd see two access points. I saw 25 today. So in that year and a half, 2 year range, you can see the growth of access points and things like that.
Now, I've known you for, 17 years now, something like that, and I know you're not the type that goes out looking for this thing unless you had a good reason, and I'm sure one of the reasons is security, so that you can look to see who just is open, who isn't. You have some statistics, but surely you might want to say, hey, I found your signal that was open, and it might even be a source of information and business for you.
That's,
are you allowed to do that?
Yes. You're allowed to do it because basically, and I have done it, and basically, what I don't, want, in a sense, care if I get any business, but I would want to tell a business, hey, just so you know it's open, take care of it. Whether you go somewhere else or you ask me for help, I don't care. Just, I want to notify you because I don't want to be responsible or know about it and you get hit. It doesn't work as well as you'd expect. And I'll give you a little story. I was driving down Conshohocken on Fayette Street with my little Zarus in my pocket. And the Zarus is a handheld, like a Palm Pilot size. And I had it turned on in my pocket while I was driving. I wasn't holding it and looking at it.
Right.
Don't ever think about doing that. Got back to the office and I opened it up. And I started scrolling through and I saw all these access points. I actually found a 3-page fax that was from a law firm to someone else. And the 3-page fax said on the cover, if you receive this in error, notify us immediately and destroy it. And then it went on to be the other 2 pages of the fax.
That actually printed out on your screen.
Yes.
And you did nothing, and it just appeared.
Yes. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's listening. Anything that's sent out in clear text can be received.
It is. Right.
We called the law firm, and it actually turned out to be a friend of a salesperson who knew, and he told them. And they didn't take it that well, in the sense that we know it's open. The guy's been working on it for the last month, so don't worry about it.
So, well, you just destroy it like it said, you're okay.
Right. So, you know, we just deleted the file and not worried about it. We notified him, but he didn't. They, even going in as carefully and as gently as possible, people take it as a threat when you're giving them, it's almost shoot the messenger. I'm telling you, as a good guy,
right.
I'm out there doing computer security for power plants and banks and all these other places as a good guy. If I tell you something, I'm not the bad guy who's trying to break in. If I wanted to break in, I wouldn't be talking to you. You know, why would I tell you this? So people don't take it that well. We do. I do notify people, as you can tell. A lot of times you can't. A lot of times the note that comes up on the screen says link sys or D-link and the kind of generic names. But when it comes up with a corporation name, and I recognize, oh, wait, I just passed it.
And
Joe Smith, you know, insurance company, and it says Joe Smith, I'll give them a ring and just say, hey, just so you know, it's open. But open is not always bad. Thinking about one thing real quick, the hotspots. Okay? Joe Smith may want his access point open because it's only connected to the internet, not his internal office network, and it's there for his customers when they come in to talk. When they're sitting in the lobby, they can surf the web.
Right.
So when I make the call, I don't assume there's a problem. I just let them know in case they don't understand the security.
Have you ever done we're driving by accident?
We're connecting.
We're connecting is a better term.
And actually, that's the second piece. One is listening. The second piece is using or connecting to a network. That's where you cross the line and it becomes actually a criminal offense.
What happens if you get to a network accidentally? Basically, I was trying to shoot an antenna between my store and my home. I had a highly directional antenna, and I was trying to tune in the one at the store, and all of a sudden I got the signal, and I clicked on Internet Explorer, and I was surfing.
Mm-hmm.
And within a minute, I wanted to see my identification on the thing. I said, whoops, this isn't my store. And it kind of scared me a little bit because it wasn't my connection, and I dropped off.
Exactly. And
did I cross the line accidentally?
Yeah, you crossed the line accidentally. And that's not something that you can actually protect yourself from because, like, XP attempts to connect automatically. So you don't even have the chance, in a sense, a lot of times, to stop.
I know.
So there is the innocent I've connected by an accident.
Okay, we have a caller. So we're going to get our caller and let him join in. Can we get your name and find out where you're calling from?
Yes, good morning. My name is Brian. I'm calling from Downingtown. Dean, how are you? I've taken a couple of your courses, and I think you're a great teacher. That's a great person to know as well.
Hey, thanks a lot, Brian.
You're very welcome. I ran into a snag, and I want to know if you can help me out, Kate.
We're going to try.
All right. I had a Morton antivirus software put onto my computer, and I'm sorry, it's Symantec antivirus, and it was the same company anyway. It was telling me I had X amount of days before it was going to time out, and I never activated it. Well, it timed out yesterday. I just completely froze up. I can't do anything. Another one was just an antivirus on my system, and it was working well, but now I can't do anything. Do you have any suggestions for me to get around this?
Basically, I believe you're going to have to call Symantec and tell them you have an Norton antivirus that expired, and they should be able to give you a key. Of course, they're going to get your credit card number, and you'll sign up again with a new subscription.
Okay, but if my system's locked up, would they give me a key? Would that allow me to get unlock the system, basically?
Now, let me get the picture. Is this Windows XP?
Yes.
And this is Norton 2004?
Correct.
Is the whole computer locked up, or is just your antivirus locked up?
The whole computer's locked up. I get that name screen where it says owner, and I have like a little icon that looks like chessmen, and that's on the front page. And the only thing I can do is basically lock it off.
Basically, here, did you activate your Windows XP? Did you go for an activation? Is this a new computer?
No, it's not. But I just have my system redone over again because I was having problems, and they put the drivers back in all over again, and then they also added the Norton antivirus on there as well because I had a bug before that caused me to have some problems.
If the system was just redone, then Windows needs to be reactivated again. And what I think has happened here that I've seen before, of course I'm not seeing and can't experience what you're experiencing, but if Windows was reinstalled, it may want to be reactivated. And there was a little icon that should have reminded you that it needed to be reactivated. And because that didn't happen, Windows itself may have shut down rather than the antivirus. What I think you may have to do is call Microsoft up.
Okay.
And you'll need your serial number that came with Windows, and you'll need to have a few hardware details about your computer, what kind, what processor, how much memory, and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that XP has locked you out because of the activation process. Do you think the same story on that?
I don't have any experience with the activation process. The only thing I was going to possibly say was try going into safe mode, and if you can log into the computer in safe mode, then you can uninstall Symantec. But I don't have experience with activation.
The key here that caught my eye was that he just had his computer redone, and that's why I think it's on activated.
Right.
Because if it's reinstalled, it has to be reactivated. It would have been a simple thing to just click on the icon and let it do it while it was online.
Or I could have disabled it, that I found out today. I could have clicked on the icon and disabled that Norton antivirus, so I wouldn't have to worry about
it. I don't think it was the antivirus that shut you down. I think it was Windows XP that shut you down.
Oh.
Because XP was not activated or reactivated.
Okay.
That's what I think happened.
Okay, so I would have to try giving Microsoft a phone call as well then.
What I would do is I would look up their number, give them a call with all the stuff that I just told you to have at hand, the serial number, the hardware information, and say, my computer was just reloaded clean, and I forgot to reactivate it, and now it's shut down.
Okay.
And that should be the key words that get some help from them.
All right. I have another question as well. I've listened to your show since you came on. It's a great show. I've been passing your guys' show around at work as well. And I know there's a lot of people that I work with listen to your show as well, and we love it. My next question is, I'm also looking at getting my system image as well. And I'm looking at your, I don't know if you can suggest where I can go and try to find a hard drive, an external hard drive where I can have my image copied onto. So if something like this happens again, I can just go on and upload it again and go reorder everything and back to square one.
I have a drive that I sell, and I use one myself that plugs into the USB port, and it is much greater than the capacity of my hard drive. This is a 120 gigabyte hard drive.
Wow.
And it has multiple images on it. So I can go last week, last month, and when I first set up the computer, I can pick any one of the images. And if you'll see me at the store, I will be happy to guide you to that, show you what it is, and that would probably be your answer to make an image. And for the listeners that don't know, an image is a picture of your hard drive, and when you take that picture of all the data on the hard drive, you should be able to restore that image back to your hard drive should some catastrophe happen that you lose everything. And it's a very good way to back up your hard drive.
Let me ask you a question. If I had that my system image previously and one of the problems that I'm running into currently, would I be able to re-image my system, I guess, or to use re-images, but can I be back to square one?
Actually, there's a funny thing that might happen depending upon the cycle. If you did this before you got the viruses, and while the activation had taken effect, you would have been able to get it back to that point. If you had gotten your computer back and you had not activated it, the funny thing would happen when you replace that image. You go to boot up your computer, and it would recognize that you're past your 30 days, and it would have shut you down right away.
Wow. Okay.
Wham.
Back to square one again.
Back to square one. So you got to watch these little things, and when you get these little pop-up messages, particularly the ones from Windows, not the ones that come over the email and some of the web pages, but when Microsoft truly gives you a message, you need to react to those. And it's one of the unfortunate things that sometimes you don't know where these messages are coming from.
Right. And I kind of like brushes the size of, oh, well, it's just, I'm just not going to be, I guess I'm not going to be protected at that point if it times out. And I threw, well, at that point, then I activated later on. But last night, when I tried to get back on the system, I was uploading some pictures, and I had to turn the computer off and turn it back on, and it never came back on. So
I think that's what happened. You got locked out.
All righty. Well, thank you, lad. You guys keep doing a great job, and listen to you each and every week.
Thank you very much for calling, Brian. Have a good night.
Bye-bye now.
You're listening to Computer Corner here on 1420 WCOJ, the voice of Chester County. I'm your host, Gene Mitchell. We have in the studio Joe Hubler, my sidekick, and Troy Susano, who is our networking expert of the evening from NetForcement in Conshohocken. And we do need to take a short break for one of the words from our sponsor. You are listening to Computer Corner here on 1420 WCOJ, the voice of Chester County. I'm your host, Gene Mitchell. I have my sidekick, Joe Hubler, and I have my networking expert with me tonight, Troy Susano from NetForcement. And we've been talking about Wi-Fi. That does not mean how great your music sounds. That has to do with your wireless connection to your computer. And, Troy, we've covered a lot of interesting things tonight, but there's still one question that I've been meaning to ask you. And we've been talking about this war driving and some of the innocent stuff, but there's actually been some stuff that's actually been very serious. I reported on one, and I know that you have a couple of cases that are most interesting.
Yeah, we've already spoken. One of the things is listening, which is an innocent activity. Using, which can be an accident, like Gene mentions, or using can actually be a criminal activity by the law. And what that means is if you go and connect to a private network that you did not ask for permission to use their internet connection, you can be guilty of a misdemeanor. Now, there has not been too many people caught, but there was one person in Michigan. He pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor for using an access point at Lowe's Home Improvement Store to check his email. Now, the only reason he was caught doing this kind of innocent activity, he wasn't trying to break anything, he was just checking his email, was because the FBI was there monitoring two criminals who were trying to steal credit cards. So he happened to be, oh, I've got an access point, I'll check my email. He might have been a traveling salesperson. He kind of got caught in that web and actually was prosecuted.
Actually, I think one of the stories that we reported on that I was thinking about was the two that had actually broken into the computer, and that my memory's a little foggy on the actual store because I didn't try to remember it, but I think that might have been a Lowe's, and maybe this is the one we reported on, and here's a guy that thinks he's an innocent bystander and not so innocent.
Exactly. Anytime you use a network that you do not have permission for, it's illegal. And so you if you accidentally connect, the first thing you want to do is just disconnect. You don't want to continue reading your email.
What if you didn't know it wasn't legal? Like you said, there's a lot of Wi-Fi going up at stores. Now, if I walked into Lowe's and the Compilot linked up, I would just assume that was one of their little...
Right, and it's really not an issue right now because there's so many access points. People do it by accident without criminal intent. The only reason this person was caught or prosecuted was because it was part of his FBI case to catch the real criminals. So it was kind of catching up and making a warning to people, hey, don't expect that you're allowed to do this. So you should learn that unless you're specifically allowed, don't.
Right. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And there's some other really scary stories about Wi-Fi. I'll really quickly go through one. There was a guy in Los Angeles who was using people's Wi-Fi networks in a neighborhood to send thousands of unsolicited spam adult-themed email from his car. He pleaded guilty to a felony in what prosecutors say was the first criminal conviction under the federal CAN-SPAM Act. But basically, if you have open access wireless at home, someone could be using your network to send spam, and no one wants to be involved with that.
Yes. That means if you have an open connection and your connection is sending spam, you're right in the middle of an illegal activity.
That is something that people have been talking about for the last few years, that liability. At what point do you become liable for the criminal activity? And it hasn't come through in any of the cases yet, but it's very close. It's very close to becoming a serious problem. And we warn businesses about that specifically because when a lawsuit comes out, it goes for the person with the most money. If it was a corporation with a lot of money, and a guy in his car, we're going to go for the deep pockets and try to get some money out of that. Just so you know, I have some more stories and also some other wireless tips on my website. If people wanted to take a look, if you just go to www.netforcement.com/WCOJ. And what I did is I posted these stories and some links about what we talked about tonight, including some things we didn't get to.
I saw you put the link on your website back to WCOJ, and
yeah.
Thank you very much for doing that.
No problem.
But here's some tips that if you're running wireless, that you need to remember this website, because if you ignore it, you could be in trouble. This sounds like some real good information, and I think that's one of the first things I'm going to do tomorrow, go to the website and look at this list, print it out, so I'm sure I'm up to speed.
Yeah, we have a list of 33 wireless steps that you should do. We have a story about the long-distance shootout, but it's www.netforcement.com/WCOJ.
Great. And before we run out of time, I want you to get a chance, since you came all this distance, to join us and give us all this good information. I know you're going to be presenting in King of Prussia in a couple of weeks. You want to tell the listeners what you're going to present?
Sure. The Philadelphia iTech Expo is being held in King of Prussia. I believe it's November 10th and November 11th. And I'm doing a presentation on the 11th at 11:30. On defending against application level attacks. And that's basically talking about how people can protect their corporation's websites from hackers or spammers or other things. And I'll try to give some people some real examples of real world what we found, including big software companies, like the number one, two, and three software companies, what they have found or have had happen to them. So it'll be an interesting presentation out at the iTech Expo.
You're always full of good information, and I always enjoy talking to you, even if it's a short one on the telephone, and I really am glad that you're able to join us tonight. We're talking to Troy Sozano from NetForcement. He has been our guest tonight. We've been talking about Wi-Fi, and Wi-Fi is the 802.11b wireless and hotspots and all that good stuff. And we also want to remind our listeners that we have a website This website is WCOJ.com. You want to go under programming, and under programming, click on Computer Corner, and we have our schedule coming up for the coming weeks. We have a lot of interesting topics. We're connected with getting a lot of good people on the show, and we want you to be aware of it. And while you're on the website, you might also look at some of the other programs that are on there. Doug Sterling has the morning show, and he's on from 5:30 to 10 o'clock in the morning, and he has all this good information with the latest news, local, so local that we even report lost dogs, and all kinds of good information. And also, my buddy Mark Molinese has a show on Tuesday night, and he's doing a bang-up job on Tuesday night. Mark on the move, and next Tuesday is election night, and he's going to do a show just before the election that should be very interesting. So we'll all look forward to that. We're in our final seconds of our show here, and we thank you all for joining us here at Computer Corner, and we'll see you all next week. This is Gene Mitchell, host of Computer Corner on Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. You're listening to the voice of Chester County, 1420 WCOJ, Coatesville, Westchester.